Welcome to EncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. EncLive On Air is a podcast from EncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, EncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by AstraZeneca, we had the pleasure of speaking with Charu Agarwal, MD, MPH, a medical oncologist at Abramson Cancer Center of Penn Medicine, and the Leslie M. Heisler Associate Professor for Lung Cancer Excellence at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, to discuss the five-year survival data from the Phase 3 PACIFIC trial that were presented at the 2021 ASCO Annual Meeting. Updated results from the trial showed that durvalumab following chemoradiotherapy was associated with robust and sustained overall survival and progression-free survival benefits in patients with unresectable stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer whose disease had not progressed after concurrent chemoradiotherapy. Specifically, at a median follow-up of 34.2 months, the median overall survival was 47.5 months with durvalumab versus 29.1 months with placebo. Moreover, the median progression-free survival was 16.9 months versus 5.6 months, respectively. Of note, an estimated 42.9% of patients randomized to durvalumab remained alive at 5 years versus 33.4% of patients randomized to placebo. Additionally, an estimated 33.1% of durvalumab-treated patients remained alive without disease progression versus 19% of placebo-treated patients.
Hello, and welcome to EncLive On Air. Today, we will talk about management of locally advanced non-small cell lung cancer. Locally advanced non-small cell lung cancer represents a heterogeneous group of patients that span the spectrum from resectable to unresectable non-small cell lung cancers. The definition of unresectable lung cancer stems from being either medically inoperable or technically and surgically unresectable. There are concerns and also valid arguments for putting certain set of patients through surgery while saving chemoradiation or a non-surgical approach for patients with either bulky tumors or with significant mediastinal lymph node involvement at multiple stations or with bulky lymph nodes. In this setting, our previous standard of care had been to proceed with concurrent chemoradiation therapy alone using a platinum-based combination therapy. There used to be significant debate about the use of consolidation chemotherapy following such an approach, as well as the use of chemotherapy regimens. Should we use a cisplatin, etoposide-based regimen, or should we use carboplatin and Taxol-based regimen followed by two cycles of consolidation? I say this to point out that even in the presence of these arguments, our standard of care really used to stop at concurrent chemoradiation therapy. However, results from the Phase 3 PACIFIC trial reported in 2017 and then in 2018 showed that the addition of a PD-L1 inhibitor, durvalumab, significantly improved both the primary endpoint of overall survival and progression-free survival in patients with unresectable stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer without disease progression after concurrent chemoradiotherapy. The overall survival hazard ratio had been reported as 0.68, and the progression-free survival hazard ratio had been reported at 0.52. These findings transformed the treatment landscape for unresectable stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer and established durvalumab after CRT, so-called the PACIFIC regimen, as the standard of care. So let's look back and review the trial design pretty quickly before we speak further. So as I mentioned before, this was a Phase 3 randomized double-blind, placebo-controlled, multi-center international trial that enrolled patients with unresectable stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. And these patients had to undergo concurrent chemoradiation. Enrollment began after completion of concurrent chemoradiation, and these patients did not have to have disease progression after at least two cycles of platinum-based chemoradiation therapy, patients had to be 18 and older with a performance status of 0 or 1. And then PD-L1 testing was performed on tissue if available. A total of 713 patients were randomized. Patients were randomized in a 2:1 fashion to the experimental arm of durvalumab that was administered at 10 milligram per kilogram every 2 weeks for up to 12 months, or placebo every 2 weeks for 12 months. 476 patients received durvalumab, and the primary endpoints were PFS using RECIST 1.1 as well as overall survival. Previous data were reported in 2017 and 2018, and this year at the annual meeting for the American Society of Clinical Oncology, we heard updated data looking at 5 years after the last patient was randomized. This data cutoff was early January 2021. And this data, really these analyses were exploratory and post hoc. The treatment effects were estimated using the stratified log rank test and ITT population. And then the median and yearly landmark rates were estimated using the Kaplan-Meier method. And what we found was really fascinating. Updated overall survival percentage at 5 years was 43% for the patients that received durvalumab, compared to only 33% on the standard of care arm, really demonstrating a tail to the curve for these patients that receive immunotherapy. Hazard ratio for overall survival was 0.72, with quite a narrow interval of 0.59 to 0.89. And then if we look at the progression-free survival curves, we see a similar trend. There is a tail to the curve with even PFS, which is quite interesting. 5-year PFS rate of 33.1% compared to 19% with placebo, and a PFS hazard ratio was 0.55. These results, based on the 5-year data from the Pacific trial, again demonstrate robust and sustained overall survival as well as a durable progression-free survival benefit with the Pacific regimen. An estimated 43% of the patients randomized to the durvalumab arm remained alive at 5 years, and about a third remain alive and free of disease progression. So I think this is a very important point, that we are increasing our ability to cure patients with locally advanced non-small cell lung cancer with the use of durvalumab. Really, I think, underscores the importance of using this regimen and establishes a new benchmark for the standard of care in this setting. There are certain nuances that we should discuss and consider. Subset analyses do reveal that patients with PD-L1 negativity or lack of PD-L1 expression may not sustain such a robust response to durvalumab. And I think an intelligent discussion should be had with the patient in a shared decision-making model to discuss that, while we don't quite know in a prospective way whether or not PD-L1 testing or PD-L1 positivity may impact survival, we do know from subset analyses that patients with PD-L1 negative tumors may not quite have the same effect. And the way I do this with my patients is I talk to them about the schedule of administration, what it would involve, what would durvalumab consolidation look like. And I also talk to them about the potential side effects. So while this trial looked at every 2-week dosing of durvalumab, durvalumab is now available at a flat dose and FDA approved for every 4-week administration, which makes it easier than having to come to the infusion center once every 2 weeks. And certainly, I think, is much more acceptable to patients, because this is a treatment that they have to be on for a total of a year after completing chemoradiation therapy. So I think that helps. And then I do talk to my patients about the potential side effects of durvalumab, which could be immune-related adverse events, including endocrine issues such as hypothyroidism, inflammation of the gut causing colitis, leading to symptomatic diarrhea. And one of the more common things that we worry about in this setting, especially after having received radiation therapy, is the possibility of pneumonitis. And it may be difficult to distinguish, is it radiation-related pneumonitis or immune-related pneumonitis? And I talk to patients about really being cautious about their symptoms, if they have shortness of breath, if they have fevers, if they have a new cough, that they need to tell me right away. I do use imaging to guide my management of pneumonitis in this situation very frequently. So for example, if I see that a patient has unilateral pneumonitis or changes or inflammatory changes sort of within the radiation portal, I tend to treat this more as a radiation pneumonitis without really thinking about holding durvalumab for too long or holding durvalumab for the time period that they're being symptomatically treated, but having an easier time thinking about administering it again. However, if we find that immune-related pneumonitis is more likely the culprit, either based on bilateral findings or the presence of maybe other IRAE, then I do think about what grade of toxicity do they have. Have they required oxygen? Have they required an inpatient hospital stay? Are they truly grade 3? And then if they are truly grade 3, I tend not to continue durvalumab in the setting of a grade 3 adverse event. But I think it's just important to discern radiation-related pneumonitis from immune-related pneumonitis when it comes to management of immune-related adverse events in a patient receiving consolidation durvalumab. Having said that, I think many of us have become experienced to discuss these issues in a multidisciplinary setting. I will often pull in my radiation oncologist colleague to guide my management. We have a robust team of interventional pulmonologists who often help us and guide our treatment decisions as well. So I would definitely encourage my colleagues in the community, as well as my colleagues elsewhere, to rope in and ask for help through a multidisciplinary system. So now that we've discussed the five-year analysis, what's next on the horizon for management of stage 3 non-small cell lung cancers that may be unresectable? I think it's a very exciting time now that we know that we can deliver consolidation immunotherapy seamlessly. There has been an interest to move immunotherapy further up into the treatment regimen. At this year's annual meeting of ASCO, we also saw data from phase 2 clinical trial, the KEYNOTE-799, that evaluated incorporation of immunotherapy, that is pembrolizumab, upfront with concurrent chemo radiation therapy, where patients receive one cycle of combination chemo immunotherapy, a full dose chemotherapy cycle, followed by concurrent chemo immunoradiation therapy. And then the immunotherapy was continued for a total of 1 year. So I think that's another approach to really integrate immunotherapy early on into the treatment paradigm. The other thing that's going to be interesting is the use of alternate radiation schedules, as well as the use of approaches where sequential chemo radiation therapy is being used, and how can we use immunotherapy in a novel fashion in those situations. Having said this, I think for now, we are able to extend the benefit of a cure as well as living disease-free to our patients, or I should say living progression-free to our patients with the use of durvalumab.
We also sat down with Nicolas Girard, MD, PhD, a professor of respiratory medicine at Versailles-Saint-Quentin University and head of the Curie-Montsouris Thorax Institute in Paris, France, to discuss the results of the PACIFIC-R trial that were presented during the 2021 ESMO Congress. Results from PACIFIC-R recapitulated the benefit that has been reported with durvalumab following concurrent chemoradiotherapy in patients with unresectable stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer in a real-world setting. What was the rationale for conducting this analysis?
So this is an observational study of durvalumab after completion of chemoradiotherapy, no disease progression for patients with unresectable non-small cell lung cancer, locally advanced disease, stage 3 disease. The landmark study that demonstrated the effectiveness of durvalumab in this situation is a PACIFIC trial, This is a large trial, 700 patients, but selected patients, because this is a clinical trial. Patients had to receive concurrent chemoradiotherapy, which is not actually the clinical practice, because many patients may receive sequential chemoradiotherapy. About 40% of patients in France, for example, in this situation. So we had to look at the actual real-world efficacy of durvalumab. And this was made possible through the expanded access programs for this drug. So we enrolled patients who initiated durvalumab, part of an expanded access program, in this situation of unresectable, locally advanced non-small cell lung cancer, completion of chemoradiotherapy, and no disease progression, whatever is a PD-L1 status. This is a cohort of 1,399 patients from 11 countries, 290 hospitals. So we have here a large cohort of patients, first to confirm the effectiveness of durvalumab in terms of PFS and OS, which were the primary endpoint of the study, but also to look at subgroups of patients. And the key finding of PACIFIC are that I presented during this meeting on behalf of all the co-authors is the real-world median PFS, which was 21.7 months, which is actually higher than that reported in the landmark PACIFIC trial. So this is unfrequent that a real-world study does better than the clinical trial, because the expectation is that patients in a real-world setting are less selected, may have a poorer performance status, and so on. Here, we have very prolonged PFS. Obviously, this is a retrospective study, so we may have bias in the analysis of real-world PFS, especially with regard to the time intervals between the imaging assessment for the patient. But this is a very important data, because it shows that we have we confirm the efficacy of durvalumab, which is a standard of care in this situation for the patients.
And what about safety?
So the safety profile was actually in line with that reported in PACIFIC. The most frequent side effect was pneumonitis, which is actually complex to interpret in the setting of post-chemoradiotherapy and immunotherapy, because pneumonitis may be related to radiation-induced pneumonitis, maybe infection in patients with COPD, and maybe related to immunotherapy as well. So this is a complex analysis. It occurred in 18% of the patients, usually mild or moderate in grade, and was actually managed by the use of corticosteroids. So pneumonitis led to treatment discontinuation in 9% of the patients. So this is, again, something that we have in our clinical practice. This is in line with what we do in such a situation.
Did the results of this analysis come as a surprise to you?
Well, we have had some surprises, actually, because in this cohort, we were able to analyze key subgroups of patients based on PD-L1, based on stage. And especially regarding staging, it was really interesting to see that patients with stage 3A disease, so a limited burden of the disease, especially in the mediastinum, are doing better than patients with stage B or 3, but we were able to generate the figures for median real-world PFS in those patients, which was not the case in PACIFIC. And the median real-world PFS for patients with stage 3A disease with durvalumab was 23.7 months, which is very high. It's even higher than the PFS reported in surgical studies for those patients with stage 3A disease. Obviously, patients who are receiving chemoradiotherapy followed by durvalumab are classified as unresectable patients, but even if those patients do not go for surgery. Their median real-world PFS is almost 2 years. As a reminder, in the last landmark trial on stage 3A disease, the Leungart trial, which was actually updated during this meeting, the median DFS for patients with stage 3A disease after surgery was only 22 months. So through PACIFIC-R, we are also actually discussing what is optimal management of patients with stage 3A locally advanced disease. We have obviously this standard of care that is chemoradiotherapy followed by durvalumab, but we know that some patients are directed to surgical approaches, usually not sufficient alone, so combined with adjuvant or neoadjuvant therapies. Today, chemotherapy, but we also have had results with immune checkpoint inhibitors in the perioperative setting. And at the end of the day, we need to integrate all those data to decide for a personalized strategy for each patient.
Do you think that these findings are going to impact treatment patterns for this patient population?
Well, we know that not all eligible patients in a real-world setting are receiving durvalumab after completion of chemoradiotherapy. So these data clearly show, clearly confirm the efficacy, demonstrate the safety of this treatment that was administered for a median duration of 11 months in this cohort. So again, this is a standard of care. We have multiple studies ongoing in this setting, trying to even more optimize the results. We have studies that are combining immune checkpoint inhibitors with chemotherapy and radiotherapy. We have studies that are combining with durvalumab other immune checkpoint inhibitors, and we have seen preliminary data from the COST trial, combination of durva plus monalizumab plus oleclumab. So this is a field of interest for thoracic oncologists. We need to do better, even if we have this median PFS of 21 months. This is obviously not enough, and we need to even improve the management of those patients.
And you alluded to PACIFIC-2. So based on these findings, what are your thoughts on ongoing studies like PACIFIC-2, which are evaluating more intensive treatment regimen?
We do not have the results from PACIFIC-2. This will be very interesting because for those patients, if PACIFIC-2 shows benefit from the adjunction of durvalumab to chemotherapy and radiotherapy upfront, we will have two strategies for those patients. Some patients will go for chemoradiotherapy and then for durvalumab in the absence of disease progression. And it may be patients that may not be eligible for immunotherapy upfront because of a need for high doses of steroids, because of poor general condition. So this is something that is still valuable. Patient probably with maybe smaller tumors, patients in a very good general condition, we could go for durvalumab upfront in combination with chemo and radiotherapy, and then continuing in a strategy that where durvalumab is continued after this induction phase. So obviously, we will have to look at the figures of those two studies, but ultimately, this is not the same patient population. In PACIFIC, patients are randomized after completion of chemoradiotherapy. So this is actually highly selected population of patients without disease progression who were able to complete chemoradiotherapy without major toxicity and that were randomized in the study. In PACIFIC-2, this will be all the patients, including maybe some patients who will progress during chemoradiotherapy. This is not very frequent, probably less than 10% of the patients in my clinical practice, but it may obviously happened. So we will have to see how the patients are responding to the Pacific 2 regimen, what will be the actual survival and the long-term survival of those patients. Because what we want with an early exposure to immune checkpoint inhibitors is the long-term survival. And this is what we expect so far. Once we give immune checkpoint inhibitors, immunotherapy, as early as possible in patients with lung cancer, we have higher benefit.
Is there anything else from this study that I didn't ask you that you wanted to emphasize?
This is an ongoing study, and we expect to have an additional follow-up for those patients. We expect to report median OS. We will have a five-year follow-up for this cohort of patients. So this will be very interesting because, again, now what we want in non-small cell lung cancer is long-term survival. And long-term survival without disease progression, meaning cure for the patient. Patient that is alive without any event of disease progression and without treatment, to me, is a patient that we may define as cured from the disease.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by AstraZeneca. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.